And I'd get like, I was like, one tostada, please. And breadsticks. And they'd give them to me.
They were obliged, really.
They were like, this is a culinary disaster. I'm like, you put it on the menu, I'm gonna order it. You made
this happen. It's not my fault, I'm doing it.
No.
I mean, hello.
Oh, hi, everybody.
Welcome to Out of Dodge, a podcast
hosted by us. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Shane.
And we went to film school. And we feel oddly qualified to voice our opinions on movies, TV shows, video games, visual media, the like.
So in honor of the recent fire movie that HBO dropped, like literally it's about fire, we decided we'd talk about disaster movies. Kind of a subgenre of action movies, but also in a weird way its own thing. For better or for worse.
I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan of them.
I kind of am a fan of them. I know, obviously, we've been burned with a few stinkers. Everybody on some level is afraid of disaster. Like, it can vary on what it is, depending on where you live or, like, what's going on in the world around you. But everyone kind of has that fear in the back of their head. And these films, they can kind of connect us. You can kind of, like, this universal, we're afraid of this, and I don't know what we would do if this happened. And they're entertaining, and usually they offer a little bit of hope. It's like, you know what? If we all band together, if we try our hardest, we can get out of whatever horrible event is going to come.
Yeah, and I also think there's something on a human level that is super cathartic about watching a big old CGI city get swallowed up by a tsunami. You know, there's something about it where you go, that's pretty rad.
It is really cool to watch shit get horrifically destroyed because it's not really happening.
Exactly.
I think one of my favorite things about disaster movies, and they don't all do this, but a lot of them do, is a sense of dread. Like, there is a sense of impending doom, like this coming horror that can't be stopped, and all these little warning signs of this horrible thing is coming. And it's ironic because obviously the audience knows what the movie's going to be about. Because when a disaster movie comes out, it does not hide the bit. It's like, this is a giant tidal wave. This is, the sun's going to blow up. The core is melting down. This tornado is a little bit bigger than normal. We all know what the bit is. You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, you go into it because it's the film's named after the shit that's going on.
Yeah.
You're like, well, what's going to happen in Volcano? And that's the thing that I, for the most part, I enjoy. And I think for the most part, disaster films nail.
Yeah.
Where other films don't, you know, struggle to deal with this, but the ticking clock aspect.
Oh, yeah.
Where you know when you walk into a film, okay, something's going to happen, and, you know, we have until, you know, minute 90 for it to happen. And for the most part, it happens. There's a few examples where they're like, we narrowly avoided the thing the movie's titled after. Looking at you, Geostorm.
There are all these little signs at the beginning. And I think, like, zombie films are especially great at that because they'll be like, oh, somebody got bit and there's helicopters in the air and 911 is down and no one knows what's going on. And most of the characters are like, I don't fucking care. Well, it's not a problem. But the audience is like, oh, no, it's about to get fucking scary in here. Like, for example, Train to Busan. You see, like, a deer get up that got hit by a truck and then its head, like, snaps and it's still alive. Or you see, like, a passenger collapse on the train after getting bitten. And you're like, I know the bad thing is happening. But the main character's like, it's fine. I don't know.
Disaster films take full advantage of dramatic irony
in
a way that other genres just can't. Dramatic irony is when the audience knows something that the characters within the film don't. So, like, we know the monster's behind the door, but... You know, the person coming home and swinging open their closet door doesn't know that. So we're like, we feel the sense of dread that the characters don't because we care about the characters. Something that I have noticed as a kind of a trend is like redemption for characters. Like, you know, the main character will be, he's like a lazy guy who's like down in his luck and his wife divorced him or whatever. But then at the end of the film, he's like, no, I'm heroic. I can do things. I have earned the respect of my son, and, you know, or, you know, I'm a firefighter who jumps out of planes, and I'm, you know, have all this trauma because I let kids die, and, but, you know, I saved someone, and that made me, you know, that is like the turnaround point for my life, because I was able to save someone and do a good thing, and disaster itself is a catalyst for character change.
Yeah.
Which is cool, which is neat.
I think that also connects to the idea that if, like, we were put in that situation, or if somebody in the, like, as an audience, you're like, oh, mm-hmm. well, if I was in this situation, I bet I'd be really cool, too.
So now that we've identified the good bits about yes. disaster movies, do we want to talk about some kind of drawbacks of the genre?
Sure.
I find it odd that the films sometimes take themselves either too seriously or not serious enough, you know?
Yeah, it is a very difficult balance to strike. And I think a lot of it perhaps depends on the scale that you're working with, because not mm-hmm. all disaster movies obviously are the same, because sometimes it is, there's a volcano in a small town, it's gonna go off and kill absolutely everyone. That's fairly serious.
Yeah,
I get that. Or maybe it's the sun has special sunbeams and the sunbeams will make the earth angry, and like, you can't take that seriously because that's a stupid idea.
Is that Knowing?
That's 2012.
See, I was going to say 2012, just because, like, its tone is so bizarre. Because at one point, it's goofy, and it's like these Russians, you know, flying a big old plane and whatnot. And then, the next minute, it's like one of the main characters, like, on the phone with his dad, as his cruise ship is, like, tipping.
God, that was a bummer.
And people are falling to their death.
I would also like to mention the brief moment where the president is covered in ash, lying on like the ground in front of the White House, and then he looks up to see a fucking aircraft carrier that is being carried by a giant tidal wave, and then it crushes the White House, which is like, that's horrifying.
Oh yeah, it's insane.
That's but just then, nuts.
But it has a weird goofy energy to it.
It's really rambunctious,
because you have like Woody Harrelson living in the woods being like, I know all the answers. It's gonna explode and stuff.
And then he's doing a fucking live podcast as a Yellowstone volcano is erupting, and then he gets murdered by rock.
You know, him and Bernie from King Kong vs. Godzilla would have been good buddies.
I do feel like Bernie was like a ripoff of Woody Harrelson's character.
Sure.
Like 100%. What kills me is, so 2012, they completely destroy California. And I respect just that they were like, you know what? We're going to have it sink into the ocean. It's going to be the most fucking absurd thing you've ever seen. They're going to be flying through skyscrapers as they fall. Like, they narrowly miss a subway that just explodes. And I'm like, sure.
But then, where'd that come from?
After 2012, a few years down the line, they're like, we're going to do a movie called San Andreas about big earthquake in California. And I'm like, but how can you make it more entertaining than California sinking into the ocean? And they're like, we won't. And I'm like, interesting strategy.
Their thing was, we'll have The Rock carry it. And by that, I mean Dwayne The Rock, not just A Rock.
Who is very good, but that film is very bad.
It's a mess. It's a mess. But it doesn't hit those highs, you know?
The thing about San Andreas is that they got a little notebook out and they wrote down the character redemption, big disaster, a little bit of ticking clock, but they didn't add any innovation or any fun energy to it that you need. There weren't any characters where you were like, yeah that character, or there weren't any disaster sequences that were memorable. It was just like, blah, 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 movie's done.
So I think a drawback of disaster films, which isn't exclusive to disaster films, but it is prevalent, is diminishing returns. 2012, right? The first thing we see is LA get swallowed by the ocean because of the big old earthquake. That's the best sequence in the entire film. Everything else from there is less impressive.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's really hard to top that, but you had to if you wanted to keep people's attention. Also, the movie's like 2.5 hours long. It's so long. Like, Knowing does a good job of this, where it builds. No, it doesn't.
Cut that bit. Okay. But just for the sake of conversation, nothing is as good as the plane crash.
That's insane.
Yeah,
insane.
Maybe we'll keep this in. So in the movie Knowing, Nicolas Cage is in it, and there's a time capsule, and there's a list of dates that correspond to disasters, and it was aliens, and it's not a good movie. It doesn't make any sense. But
no.
There's this one scene where he is looking for this disaster zone, and he's parked in a car, and then this plane crashes. Like, it It skims the highway, takes out a power line, and then crashes in a field. And it's so horrifyingly realistic.
Yeah.
Like, it is one of the most harrowing disaster sequences I've ever seen. Because he's, like, Nicolas Cage is stumbling through the wreckage, and people are blowing up, and they're on fire, and it's just
it's
awful.
It's brutal.
Scary.
Yeah.
Scary.
It's terrifying. They did a really good job. Yeah, no, good sequences in that film. Just all over, just kind of a mixed bag.
What's also important, I think, is, like, the disaster itself. Like, what is the catalyst for this film? Is the big thing that everyone's running away from or scared of cool enough? Like, is it, like, invigorating? Is it gripping? Or why is it different or worth watching this time? Like,
exactly.
Why is this tornado exciting? Or why is this wave interesting? Or why?
Well, because there's cows in the tornado. And then sometimes there's sharks.
Can I talk about a bummer one?
Yeah, please.
A bummer film, actually, is the movie Contagion. Not going to talk about it for long.
Oh.
But that came out all the way back in 2011. I remember the first time I watched it, I was kind of like, yeah, it's all right. Because they build it to be more of a character-focused thing, but it was really like a world film that was about all these people going through things. And I was like, all right. And then I watched it again about a year ago, and I was like, oh, wow, that's how it is, isn't it? That movie is like one of the ones where they take it so incredibly seriously, and it completely works, because it's very grounded in research, and it's so like depressingly realistic that you would think it was made like this year.
The Happening.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about that.
So that's one that is stupid. Just like, so it's, the trailers were really successful because it was like, oh, these people are just jumping off of buildings and killing themselves. And that's creepy and scary. And what's going on? And there's a whole mystery to it, unless you've read the book. But then when you actually watch the film, you realize what it is, and it makes the whole thing really dumb. So plants are mad that humans are there.
Yep.
And so they're like, we're going to release spores that make people kill themselves. And that's the story. And you don't find that out until like, close to the end, right?
Wait, yeah, it's semi-late. There is a scene, though, where they're in a field and they're trying to run away from the wind, and it's about as fucking stupid as it can possibly get.
Yeah. You know, the wind, something that is visually interesting? That was a joke. It's invisible.
Again, with the trailers, you were like, maybe it's a chemical attack or like something really interesting, but it's just the wind, and it doesn't make sense, and it's not exciting, and you can't really do anything about it. I made the point to say that it's really exciting to see movies about inevitable events that you can't stop. And I think that's true. However, if the sense of hopelessness is too, like, high, if it's like, oh, really, we can't really do anything about the wind, well, then why am I watching it? Like, why am I watching characters go through this if there's, like, barely anything they can do?
It's like, it's not fun to watch when all you do is lose, you know? Yeah. You need a little victories to keep me engaged and to keep going. The Mist is another one of those.
That is, yeah, I guess that is a disaster film. I mean, where, not a natural disaster, but...
No, monster disasters, but, like... The trailers were great.
I said, I think 3/4 of the movie are all right.
Oh, but... exactly. Yeah. Once things get kind of like explained or whatever, it gets less cool. Also, the movie's a mixed bag.
I think there are a lot of sequences in The Mist that work really well, but it just doesn't, I don't know. The end's real bad. I feel like it's really easy to elicit pain from the audience. And when people act like it's like really revolutionary, then they're really weak storytellers. And I feel that way about the end of The Mist, where he ends up shooting his whole family for no reason. Mm-hmm. And about the end of Game of Thrones, when the show just collapsed because it was lazily written.
They were like, well, I guess we have nowhere to go. And we're going to forget all about the characters we've developed over 8 years.
A Modern Boy that I want to talk about.
Please.
A Modern Boy that came out last year, kind of, was called Greenland, and it was about big meteor. It was actually like the last preview I saw before the movie theater shut down. So it's called Greenland. Gerard Butler's there, kind of a staple of silly action movies and disaster cinema. And there's a big meteor's coming. Everyone's got to get to Greenland because that's where the bunkers are. That's the pitch. You watch the trailer, and it's very much like, it's an action film, and this man's the only one who can run fast enough. Whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I watched the movie, and it's fucking harrowing as hell. Like, they actually kind of misdirected me in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, super stressful in a way that few disaster movies have. Like, they go the very serious route, and they actually kind of nail it. And also, you have this impending sense of, oh, yeah, don't forget the big meteor is coming.
And it's going to kill everybody.
And I recommend it because it takes itself very seriously, but they really strike that tone. And they have, like, a group of characters, this family that you root for, and you're like, I want them to make it.
I've been seeing that. I need to, like, actually check it
out. Yeah, it's on HBO Max, I think.
Fantastic. Speaking of Butler, that guy.
Yeah, there we go.
Geostorm.
Yeah, the opposite of Greenland, so, in almost every way.
Geostorm, along with 2012, they have the same issue with tone to me. Like, they don't know if they want to be serious, and they don't know if they want to be goofy as hell. Because, first off, they don't earn their serious bits at all, both those films.
Well...
What?
my argument is...
Please.
Maybe 2012 is a little too long. But they definitely do take the time, at least, to establish, like, we have group A, B, C, D. I have all these characters, this is what they want to do, and the disaster happens, and then you have to watch them go through it for better. You know, maybe they make it, maybe they die.
Okay.
Geostorm does not take any time whatsoever to really make you care about fucking anything. It wants you to have that investment, but they put no effort toward it at all. And also, the special effects look really bad. And as you said earlier, they promise a geostorm, which is like all the storms coming together to make one big storm, a thing that can't happen. And then it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen. Geostorm averted. And it's like, well, what I pay for? I want to see this geostorm.
I do. Look, I want to say one thing to Geostorm's credit is that we all did see it together at the movie theater as a fun bit. And I had a really good time making fun of it. Like, that was a good day for me.
But that had nothing to do with the actual film. That just had to do with that work, funny, cool people. Yeah, I think Geostorm, it ended with like a monologue being like, if we can all be better to each other. I'm like, you didn't earn this at all. You didn't, why would I? No, this is bad. Like,
The Day After Tomorrow from 2004 came out so long ago, and yet still works in many ways, because they do take the time to set up, like, there's his dad, and he's the big climate scientist, and he knows the bad things are coming, but he's estranged from his son. You know, he's got a lot of personal things to work out, but also it's the end of the world, so that's going on.
Yeah.
And you have all these characters from around the world that you know, that are seeing the apocalypse. One of my favorite groups of characters is, like, a weather station in the Arctic. And they are, like, calling the United States and constantly updating about what's going on, even though they don't have, like, any chance of getting out. Like, you know, this huge freeze storm is coming. It's going to destroy everything. And they're not going to live, but they're like, we're going to give our best to help you. They hit that weird balance that other disaster movies don't, where it's, like, sometimes it's fun and cool. And it's, like, you know, Los Angeles is getting torn up by tornadoes. And this, like, reporter dude gets destroyed by this billboard of, like, a naked lady, and you're like, that's funny. But they also, it's, like, very serious, and all these people are dying, and, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal gets stuck in the library, and they're trying to burn tax code books to survive, and you're like...
Aren't there, like, wolves, too?
There are wolves! he almost gets eaten by a wolf because he's trying to get medicine because his girlfriend is dying. And also, there's a giant, like, ice hurricane.
On the complete opposite note of, like... A quality film, Hurricane Heist. I just want to preface this. So they, in the beginning, there's a hurricane, and his dad's like, you're a child, don't grow up to be a criminal or whatever, and then, like, he gets sucked into a hurricane, and he's like, Dad, no. And then the lightning flashes in the clouds, and it's a skull.
Yeah, so not only did they rip off the beginning of Twister, where her father dies, but they also ripped off James and the Giant Peach, so.
Yeah. And then they start a heist during a hurricane, and they're like, it's the same storm that killed my father. It's not. That's a joke. But, like,
it can't be, actually.
It can't be. Physically cannot be. What a time, though. Like, that's the thing is, like, I'm looking online of all these films, and it's like they're either fantastic or they're garbage.
It's a hard line because inherently a lot of these disaster movies, and I'm not saying all of them, of course, but a lot of them are going to get kind of silly when it's about the apocalypse being caused by a weather machine or an ice hurricane. And if you don't have a little bit of fun or have memorable characters, then the special effects are not going to win anybody over because there's no driving emotional connection to the film.
Yeah. Poseidon, which is just a goddamn bummer fest of a film.
Oh. The special effects are weirdly really good.
Oh, they're so good.
I kind of watched that recently, and I was like, this is harrowing as hell. So many things go wrong. Things that you're like, it can't get worse than this.
And then
somebody falls into a propeller, or the elevator just crushes somebody, or some dude's like, I'll betray you. And I'm like, we're going through enough, man.
Come on, buddy.
There's a film called It's a Disaster from 2012. It's on Hulu right now, actually, and it's a comedy. Even though it's about a dirty bomb going off that poisons the air and traps all of these people in a dinner party, and they all hate each other. And I actually, to be honest with you, it has some of the best dialogue I've ever seen. Like, the pacing and the characters are so fucking funny to watch. This poison gas or radiation is, like, seeping in as the movie goes on, and it's like, there's nothing, there's nowhere we can go, there's nothing we can do. But somehow it's also really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rare for a movie to, like, be funny, a disaster movie to be funny on purpose. Because a lot of them are funny by accident, like Geostorm.
Uh-huh.
Another movie that's not funny at all that I watched semi-recently called The Unthinkable, which was Swedish. This mysterious, like, attack starts happening. The people are kind of going insane, and there's all these traffic accidents, and the grid is starting to collapse. This is, again, one of the more serious ones, because it's kind of about war and subterfuge and terrorism and shit that you never think would happen, hence you know the name of the movie. But you also are seeing it from the perspective of, like, a father and son, and this guy's trying to connect with his high school sweetheart, even though she's with somebody else, and it's awkward. But it's also good, because you have human characters going through something impossible, and you root for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of, like, the driving force of, like, really any film. But if you're going to have, like, spectacle, like, disaster films, you got to have something to ground it. And for something, like, if you're just going to destroy buildings willy-nilly, there has to be something that we care about. And that would be character and characters and relationships. So I think that's the most important part of any film. But specifically, it's real goddamn important if you want to make a kind of an unforgettable disaster film. The ones that want me dead, or whatever it's called.
I'll start off this convo about those who wish me dead.
Those who wish me dead.
A book title is not a movie title. I might have liked it. I liked it more than I didn't like it. Is that fair? Does that kind of make sense?
That's fair. That's fair.
So the movie, we all know the movie's about a big fire. That was the advertising. You know what I mean? It's a big fire. There's some murder going on. I don't know. And that's the movie. Angelina Jolie's in it. Obviously, she plays Hannah, and she was a
smoke jumper.
Okay.
Which I had no idea these people existed. I didn't think it was physically possible. But what they do is they skydive down before, like, a fire line, right, is formed. So they go, like, where the fire is gonna be. And then they either dig trenches or cut down trees and, like, kind of try to slow it down before it reaches that line.
Yeah.
And there's only 9 crews that are still operating in the United States. And I believe she's in the Montana one? Is she in Montana?
I think they're in Montana. And so she's a little traumatized, and she's like, hey, I'm going to be a fire watcher. It's a little more relaxing. Going to be up in a big, cool tower. Nothing's going to go wrong. But guess what? Things go wrong.
So wrong.
There's a the big most old wrong. Conspiracy, because then we jump to these two dudes murder a whole family.
Mm-hmm.
And this house blows up, and it's very much like they're covering their tracks. And then this dad sees it on the news and is like, oh no, they're coming for me. And his son is like, what? We gotta go all the way to Montana because they have...
John Barenthal, he plays a sheriff in the small town where Angelina Jolie lives. He is the brother-in-law of the father and son. Mr. Man says, we're gonna go and visit your uncle, and he'll know what to do.
But he says it while he's sweating more than any human being has ever sweat before.
Yeah, and rightfully so. And then the son's like, well, what do you do? What happened? What went wrong? Why are people going to kill us? And he's like, well, I'm a forensic accountant, which apparently he knows things that people did with money that is illegal and yada yada. And there's very important people tied up in all this. We actually, in the whole run of the film, we don't know what his dad found out.
I will say I did want... anything.
Yeah, me too.
Anything at all. And they really, like, so the dad has a little note that he writes, and is like, hey, if something happens to me, I want you to take this little note and then take it to the news so that people will know about the big bad thing people are doing. And we have no idea ever what the big bad thing is, other than that it's bad and it's a thing.
Like, I kind of scrubbed through to see if there was an after credit scene or whatever, but I was like, you know, fuck, man. I wanted to know what it was, but it wasn't like, I'm not like racking my brain about what it could be, because I had no clues to what it could have been.
The thing about it is that there it's nothing. You know what I mean? I feel like, I'm not saying that the writer or whoever, maybe the book, because it's based on a book.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not saying there's no answer. I'm just saying within the context of the film, it might as well be blank. You know what I mean? It's very much a, whatever you think, you know, arms dealer, sure. So there's two assassins.
Yes.
That are chasing the dad and kid because they're like, they know too much. One of them is played by the guy who played Peter Baelish on Game of Thrones. So he's kind of famous for playing a villain. He's very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And also we have bad guy number two, Patrick, who's just like, I'm along for the ride. And they like they make a real point to set up a, like an ambush on the highway. Peter Baelish over here is like, I'm going to pretend to be fixing my car. And the father and son come up and the son's like, should we stop? And the father's like, fuck no. Because he knows
yeah.
immediately.
He's like, absolutely not.
And they get shot at. And the father tries his best to just hit Peter Baelish with a car. It doesn't work, but I respect the ambition.
Yeah.
And then they go off the edge and they hit a tree. And the dad's like, kid, you got to run so far. And the kid runs. And then the father gets shot 4 billion times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All the organs are gone. And then it crashes and the car flips over. It's a film. And the kid runs, and you'll never guess who the kid runs into. Angelina Jolie.
I was about to guess. How dare you?
Like the crux of the film is basically this kid and Angelina Jolie trying to survive these assassins. But you know what? They get a little bit of help from an unexpected source. Not the Punisher, who you might think this is a big guy who's good at action. They don't really let him do anything, which I think kind of a mistake. Like why? Yep.
Why not let him
do stuff? Yeah. But his pregnant wife, however, who I believe was Allison in the film,
yes,
is the best. Because the assassins corner her at her house. And she knows they're bad immediately because they don't look good. They're like, they look swarmy as shit. And they break into her house and they hassle her. And they're like going to burn her even though she's pregnant. Bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then she uses a can of bear spray to like burn half of Peter Baelish's face off. Cool. Hot.
Yeah.
Excited.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
she escapes. But she's not done. Because she rescues the kid and Angelina Jolie. And then like brings Peter Baelish into a one-on-one firefight and then just eviscerates him.
I think she's definitely the standout character of like doing the most. It takes a minute for the film to like get where it's going.
There's a lot of like the fire is not happening before the fire is happening. I think that might be a mistake.
We've been around wildfires before, yeah. haven't we, Shane? Going yeah. to school in California. I don't know how they, like, suddenly stumble across the, like, you could smell it for, like, miles away, you know? And, like, suddenly it's, like, a huge roaring fire, and like, oh,
also,
man, this thing.
Her job
mm-hmm.
was that, and she would know right away. You would also see it way before you.
Because they're up in the tower. Oh, also, the tower gets struck by lightning, because there's, like, a bunch of lightning happening. You know, the lightning blows out all the electronics and everything, so they can't make a call to get out of there. Very convenient lightning strike, if you ask me. Yeah, so Angelina Jolie and little boy are like, okay, we gotta go to town because we gotta tell the news that the crimes are happening. And so they start walking, and they come across Lightning Valley. So that she's like, okay, we're gonna run through it, and then she gets struck by lightning, and
it
never comes up ever again. Yeah, so they get to the fire, and they're like, well, we can't go through the fire. Angelina Jolie, a little PTSD from like the last fire she fought. So she's like, we're going back because fuck this shit. I'm done. I'm tapping out. So they go back. The Punisher, who's been kind of strong armed into helping the baddies.
Yeah.
Comes to the tower and he's like, there's some bad people with guns and they're going to
kill
immediately.
Us all. Immediately. Like yeah. there's not 1 second of him being like a coward. He's like, listen,
it's real bad out here.
The bad guys open fire on the tower, and just Punisher goes down.
Patrick, who I thought was gonna be like the one who was like, maybe being bad is bad.
The whole movie it seemed like Patrick was like, maybe we shouldn't torture the pregnant lady, which good stance to have, but he turned out to be the worst guy
because he was gonna kill a child.
Yeah, they were fighting in the forest of flames and he was being real bad, and the kid was like, well, I don't want you to hurt Angelina Jolie. And he's like, well, then let me snap your neck. And the kid's like, okay. And Angelina Jolie's like, this is not okay. So she just stabs him several times with a big, sharp...
with a climbing axe, yeah.
But doesn't kill him.
She's like, I'm gonna let the wildfire do that. And then once they're done fighting, the wildfire turns into turbo mode. And is like, I'm gonna burn at a million miles per hour. But also the fire was started by the bad guys.
They
did,
yeah, they threw about 45 flares into the
area. Yeah, and they're like, well, this will distract everybody. Yeah, so Angelina Jolie and little boy are safe in a creek. And they let the fire kind of go over them. And so the next day, everything's kind of charcoal and burned, but they're alive. And the Punisher has died.
But it's okay because the boy gets the news. Does he say the big thing? No, because there's no big thing.
I mean, he probably does, but we don't see it. We just see a big old advertisement for the Park Service and the fire department, which I was like, you know, of all the things, of all the government organizations to be like, hoorah. Yeah, I think fire's pretty good.
Yeah, I think you should probably fight the fire. That's my controversial take.
Here's the thing. I feel like, and this is going to be kind of a controversial take.
That's fine.
I think they wasted Angelina Jolie because for about 45% of the movie, she is just crying.
I do think that perhaps the buildup for this one was a bit slow.
Mm-hmm.
I did like one thing that I did like, though, about Angelina Jolie's character is how fucking weird she was.
Yes.
Like, she definitely was dealing with trauma in a very, like, funny way.
Uh-huh.
Like, the way that she talked to the kid was funny. And then after the firestorm almost killed them, somebody's like, well, how was it? And she's like, it was beautiful. And the kid's like, what are you fucking talking about?
Yeah, he's like, no, it was terrible.
And I'm like, that's funny. But she didn't really have, like, a big moment, I guess, that would have been worthy of, like, her caliber, if that makes sense. And I do kind of feel that way about the Punisher, being that I know he's capable of, like, pretty good acting and pretty good action. But they're like, well, he's just going to kind of march around and then we'll shoot him. And I'm like,
it's just, it was wild because it's a crazy cast.
It's a really good cast.
It's a really good cast. But I think it was kind of squandered. Like, they didn't, maybe it was the source material or whatever, but there's like the actor that, what's his name? The Peter Baelish guy.
Aidan Gillen, I think.
Aidan Gillen. He brings it home. He's menacing,
yeah,
and he's
good.
Creepy as hell, and he's real good. But I think he's the only one that actually has shit to do in this.
Yeah, he gets, like scenes to chew on. Like, he gets moments where he can shine.
Yeah. I don't think Angelina Jolie fully gets that, because she's fantastic. But at the same time, she's not given anything to, like, really shine with.
And I also feel like, I'm not saying there should be 20 bad guys, but I think perhaps more than two.
Because
I feel like we deal with these fuckers pretty easy. Like, we get them real quick. I just feel like they needed to, like, they were very menacing, like, as, you know, the actors, but I feel like the threat of them should have been bigger.
I also, the lightning scene really pissed me off, because that's not how lightning works.
Yeah, because it was just hitting the same place, like, it was a video game level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's weird, though, is that they had this storm and lightning, and I thought, oh, it'll rain toward the end of the movie, and that'll, like, help everybody out, you know what I mean? Just kind of like, oh, we planted the storm pretty early in the movie, and then the payoff will be that it'll help everybody by raining. And it just doesn't, and I'm like,
no, they planted the storm just to have the lightning scene?
Oh, that doesn't seem worth it.
Right?
I feel like we spent maybe too much time in the tower, because we would go out, we go back to the tower, we try to leave, we go back to the tower, and I'm like,
yeah,
there's gotta be some other location in this film that we could perhaps be in.
No, it's, I mean, I don't think it was bad by any means.
I had fun. I do think that it could have been amped a little bit, and that it was kind of missing some secret sauce or some, like, electricity that could have gotten it.
Exactly.
Not literally. It had a lot of electricity in it, but it needed figurative electricity. There's only one Connecticut.
They're like, we're cops, but we hunt demons.
And the assistant walks through a giant portal
that he thought was art.
The walls are shaking. Mirrors are falling.
She sees the devil, and I think it might be her dad.
And I'm killing people, and there's a frog detective, and you're...
Welcome to Middle Watch, our famous segment where we watch an episode in the middle of a show with no context whatsoever. We make fun of these shows usually, but we're not trying to be mean. We're not trying to be like, all television is bad. There's just so much stuff out there that we can't possibly watch every show. So we try to watch a little bit of everything.
And it's fun to kind of pop in and say hi and, you know, see if it's something you want to continue watching. I personally think pilots are my least favorite episode of every show. So I don't want to start off with just the pilot, you know? I want to get to the meat and potatoes.
Sometimes a lot of, no offense to pilots, but a lot of time is spent being like, this is the character you care about, these are her friends, and this is the big monster that she has to fight, or the thing that we have to deal with, etc.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work that has to be done, and a lot of shit that has to be accomplished with a pilot that other episodes don't have to do. Like, episode 2 and 3, it's like, you're a little looser, you can have a little bit of fun. Today, we decided to watch Another Life, season 1, episode 5, A Mind of Its Own. Why'd they call it that? I have no fucking idea.
So this is a Netflix exclusive. I feel like this was just bought by them and they're like, eh. You know, I don't think it was produced by them. It doesn't look like it. You know, it has the essence of a CW show.
Before I even we even began to talk about it, it's too horny. I'm just going to say that outright. Yeah. I know it's weird. I don't want to talk about it, but we have to talk about it because this show is just too much.
It's like an underlying like sexual tension with everyone in the show. I think there's a single scene where it's everyone's not giving like each other fuck eyes, you know?
We begin this episode.
Please.
We're on a moon. And
not our moon.
It does the classic Star Wars thing. I say this with love. Where they're like, yeah, this is the 9th moon of Pluth or whatever. And it all is a forest and that's it. Like on Earth. And I'm like, sure, we're in space. Great. So they're on this moon and they land there and they're looking for an artifact. This show is all about artifacts. Basically, big alien civilization fired a ship at Earth. Not aggressively, just kind of shot it and it landed on Earth. And we're trying to figure it out. But then a team went into space and they're tracing other artifacts to try to figure out, okay, where did it come from? What do these things want? Is it bad? I'm going to say it's probably bad because it's a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the bit. So they're on the moon. They're looking for an artifact. They're all walking around. There's some fun banter because some guy's trying to wear a giant hazmat suit. And they're like, dude, it's fine. If we die, we die. And you can see there's a boy in the ground. Like there's a monster in the ground that just kind of shows up. You don't see the monster. You just see a bunch of gravel move. And everyone's like, yeah, it's whatever. We'll deal with that later.
Yeah. And they truly do.
There's a bit of a conflict. So Nico is the leader. But then her second in command, Cass, who's kind of like a navigator. Like she's tracing the signal. She knows what she's doing. She's pretty PO'd. Because apparently Nico killed Cass's old boyfriend during a scuffle. And even though Cass is like, you had every right, he sucked, I still liked him, so I feel bad about it. And I will say, you know, not to compliment the show, because we're going to make fun of it. Nico does, I think, a good job as far as interpersonal relationships and actually trying to make a connection with her team. Because she's like, listen, I'm sorry that you can't see him again. I know that sucks so, so much, even though he was a very bad man. It's an awful thing. And also, they get high in the woods. I just want to talk about this scene, because it's like the good scene in this thing. They both get high in the woods, and they're like, well, let's just list all of our character flaws and do a whole bit about it. And it's like, this is a really serious conversation that could have easily been a screaming match, you know what I mean? On the ship during, like, a supernova, because I guess that's what the show is about. I don't know. Cass is like, listen, Nico, you have a savior complex, and you're a control freak, and it drives everyone insane, and we don't love it. And you abandon us sometimes, and it's not great. And Nico's like, sure. And then Cass is like, what about me? What are my problems? And Nico's like, well, you hate yourself so, so much, and you have no confidence. And if you took over the mission, we would all die horribly. And Cass is like, okay, then don't die, and we won't have to do that. And I'm like, all right.
Cool.
What a scene. That's like, that was like a season's worth of conflict that they were like, let's just knock this out this afternoon.
Cause they're like, we have some other dumb shit we had to deal with. They get to the artifact, which we don't really get like a full clear view of it. It's just a half a prop. And then one of the dudes, Sasha, he like starts playing an anthem and puts down a little American flag, which I actually like the scene a lot because he's like reading off this like prepared statement.
It's so funny, yeah.
It's so funny. And he's like, we are from Earth and welcome. This is the first contact. And it's like he's talking to nobody, which is fantastic because it's just like this thing. And they're all like, well, let's just like leave him and let him do his thing because it's stupid. Bernie and Zane go looking for some grub and they notice that there's no animals. There's no animals on this whole planet so far. And they're like, that's weird. But they don't think about it too hard. And so they eat. They like are trying some plants out. And this is like
some space oysters. And it's a scene.
This is some real like sexual feelings going on. And he's like, oh, well, you know, I have to rub this on your wrist. And they're like, okay. And so he does it. And he's like, now I have to rub it on your lips. And they're like, okay. And it's like really sensual, you know? And then they're like, now you take a bite. And they
that's
do.
Food poisoning.
And it's terrible. I know it's not a repopulation mission, but 100% they're going to repopulate some moon somewhere because that's just everyone's doing shit.
What's wild, though, is before Bernie and Zane can do anything, mm-hmm. Bernie collapses and his leg has turned, it's all melted, it's yellow, it's full of just gross terrible stuff, but it's okay because Zane's got that Moderna, dabs him a couple times and picks him up and is like, we gotta go.
Sasha is still talking in front of the artifact.
Yeah, the obelisk.
And then he starts hearing his own voice, like, in the woods. And he's like, oh, that's not okay. And then he gets sucked into the artifact. And the CGI? Real gross. And so they get back to the artifact, and they're like, where's Sasha? We gotta go, because someone's hurt.
Also, it's nighttime suddenly.
Also, it's nighttime, because it's spooky time. Sasha appears, he's like, I just had the weirdest dream. And they're like, we got to go.
He seems really high.
Seems super out of it.
He's stumbling around. My assumption was that he's like replaced or possessed.
That's what I thought immediately.
It's sci-fi trope.
Also, it should be noted that he's, what's his name from...
Oh, he's Adam, and also Michael at one point.
One of the Winchesters.
The underground boys make their appearance. Mm-hmm. They burst out of the ground, and they're clicking, they're making monster noises.
They're big old spiders.
My issue, is that they throw all these giant spiders, they pop out of the ground. I'm like, okay, stuff's gonna happen. Cash shoots one of them in the eye or whatever, it goes down.
Immediately.
They run onto the ship, more spiders are coming, and you're like, okay. And then they leave, and that's it. So we're talking about, like, maybe 20 seconds.
Also, the monster just appears and just roars at Sasha and does nothing. It just stands there and then gets shot and then it dies. That's the whole alien encounter.
And then they escape and they go on the ship. And then Sasha is like, hey, Michelle, who had been playing solitaire the entire time on the ship, whatever. Like, hey, Michelle, we should have sex now. And I'm like, don't do that, because he needs to take a shower after being on alien planet, but he doesn't. Mm-hmm. And they have sex, or at least most of the way, because then Sasha sees another Sasha in the corner. But
wearing a red suit.
So that's pretty scary.
Oh.
That's the whole Sasha arc.
Anywho, let's talk about ship crew, because there's a lot that happens in this show. It's not a Merlin, but, you know.
No, it's not a Merlin, but I was definitely, like, constantly entertained, or at least occupied.
I was looking at things. That was what I was doing.
Things were occurring at rapid pace.
The girl that was hooking up with Sasha, what's her name?
Michelle.
Good old Michelle. Michelle and William, who looks to be, like, the computer AI system on the ship, who I think is modeled after Nico's husband, potentially. I got that vibe. He's like, oh, like, you should play solitaire and I'll teach you how to play solitaire, and they do. And then she's like, oh, I'm gonna teach you how to lose at a game because it feels better when you win finally, whatever. Also, that their whole interaction, I got let's hook up vibes from that. And he's a hologram, but, like, that's, you know,
he's a hologram. Yeah,
he's a hologram. And then that's the whole, you know, plot C or whatever.
But guess what? We got one more plot.
It's the worst one. Okay, so first off, they're like, all of these people are adults. And then there's three what arguably look like 18 to 19-year-olds on the ship. Don't know why. They're in space. We see them. And first off, there's like weird pop music playing throughout, which I thought was like, oh, they're playing music. No, that's music for the scene. They're just cleaning. And they're all making fun of each other. There's a guy with no hair. He has a buzz cut.
Oliver.
And then we have a guy who's more traditionally attractive.
Javier.
And then there's their boss, which is a woman by the name of August. They're all making fun of each other. And then August is like, well, I'm going to go get some more water so we can clean stuff. And Javier, who's like the cool laid back one, he's like, isn't she cute? I think she's pretty hot. And Oliver's like, dude, she's our boss. Even though they're all the same age and probably August is like younger than him. You know, do you think she's cute? And he's like, yeah, I guess so. But I have a girlfriend, so it doesn't matter. And then Javier's like, well, I don't. See you later, loser. And then we cut to another scene of them washing. Oliver's like, God, my neck's sore.
But he's like, oh, I don't need a break. I need a massage. And then she's like, oh, I can do that. So it's prompted, but it's still fucking weird.
It's weird.
She does it right then. And I would have been like, can we do it later? I'm still working. I'm going to hurt my neck again.
Oh, my God. And so he's like, oh, look at me, Javier. I'm getting a massage by a girl that you think is cute. And then Javier's like, well, I'm going to throw water at her because that's a funny, cute thing to do. And she's like, stop it. And like Oliver, who's like, guys, we're wasting water. We're in space. Can we not do that? And then he slips on water and hits his noggin real hard. And he's like, that's not fun anymore. And he leaves. And then August goes after him, I don't know, to help with his noggin. And then the third scene of this love triangle going on, I don't even know. They're all complaining and bickering. And Oliver's like, you gave me a concussion. And Javier's like, well, you're just this little wiener boy. No one likes you. And then August is like, you guys both suck. You're terrible people. Both of you are losers. And then Oliver, who was like, I don't like her, I have a girlfriend on Earth, goes and kisses August. And then Javier, who's like suddenly like sad now, he's like, oh guys, I'll leave you guys Bye. To it. And then August is like, no, you kiss me too. And then he does. And then they all kind of look at each other like, is
They're
this
like,
happening?
So we doing this? Sir.
And I'm just like, what? Why? Who wanted this? Who was like, yes, this is a good idea? What? Who wrote this?
Also, obviously, Javier's just a dick. And I'm like, what?
Yeah,
where's the attraction?
They're both
there?
Terrible. Oliver is like such a buzzkill, but Javier is like such an ass.
August is like, Javier, you're a complete asshole. And I'm like, sure. And then she turns to Oliver and is like, you're just a suck. And I think that's what she says, and I think it's great. Because I'm like, that's true.
It is.
It's just so goddamn weird. And it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know if I really feel the chemistry. I'm obviously,
there is none.
Like, the horny energy is here in the show. But I'm not really rooting for anybody to like hook up.
There's no 100%. Chemistry because also the acting's not there. Like, none of these people gel at all.
I have to talk about the ending, which adds a bunch of stupid shit because that's the show. We find out that one of the spider monsters gets on the ship, little baby. Mm-hmm. It'll probably eat some people later. Fun.
Please.
Hopefully
it's the teens.
Nico is talking to our good hologram boy, William, kind of about the mission. And William's like, well, they're probably like probes, you know, from aliens trying to figure shit out. Like how we try to figure shit out, you know? And Nico's like, so it's probably not evil. And then the power fluctuates. And William starts to short circuit. And you're like, what's going on? And then he vanishes and you're like, oh no. And then the gravity turns off. And then this thing just kind of like catches on fire and you're like, what does it mean? And then Cass runs in with a fire extinguisher and tries to put out the fire, but she forgets how fire extinguishers work and then gets blown backward and hits her head. And then the gravity turns back on and the fire goes away because mm-hmm. I guess it just conveniently is just like no more fire. And everyone's just stumbling around. She's like, William? And then it just ends. And I'm like, why even have a fire?
Here's the thing. This show entirely is like, why have this? And they're like, I don't know. We got 2 minutes to kill. We couldn't think of anything better. And like, that's the entire show. Like, why do anything?
There's like an idea here or there, or like a character interaction where you're like, sure, not the janitors, obviously.
No.
But I can see like the bones that a show could have been built around, especially with like, oh, there's a thing on Earth and we're trying to hunt this thing in space and it could be bad. And if we don't figure it out, then bad things will happen, whatever.
Yeah.
But like, it's so disjointed because there's so many people I don't care about.
And they're all terrible. They're all awful at their jobs. So like, I don't know who designed this whole crack team. Maybe they're like, this is the spaceship penal colony. We're gonna send all these garbage people. Like,
it's wild. It's the future. We're in space, but also we want monsters. We don't have any money for monsters, but instead we're gonna play solitaire, which is boring on Earth, and we're gonna clean, which is boring on Earth.
Show's too horny. Bonk.
Welcome to good old Newstown, where we tell you things that you probably already know. A lot's been going on. A lot good. A lot Snake Eyes. Good old Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origins. Remember how we had two of those films and then they went away for a long time? Well, they're back on July 23rd. That movie's coming out. It's about ninjas, but also G.I. Joe. Apparently, Amazon is in talks to buy MGM, which is like, they own James Bond and a lot of other things, and it's like a $9 billion deal.
Goodness
gracious. They'll also own like Rocky and Creed and apparently like Epix, which is kind of like a fringe movie TV service.
Sure.
I feel like it's going to open the door for possibly James Bond like shows or movies or spinoffs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon is actually already very invested in like the Tom Clancy verse because they have like Jack Ryan and they have Michael B. Jordan and they're trying to set up like a Rainbow Six thing over there, which I'm sure they'll do. So I feel like they already kind of know how to do the spy thing, so it would kind of make sense for them to continue that. And I'm kind of curious if the deal goes through to see what they do.
Can I mention an Amazon thing real quick?
Yeah, 100%. Go for it.
So Amazon Game Studios, which...
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
It's a mess because they think they've published three games and like all three of them are just not around anymore. Actually, no, they published two. Being Crucible and The Grand Tour. Both those games, no longer around. And then they also stopped production on the Lord of the Rings MMO. You know, probably for the best. But so, there's a new game coming out this year called New World, which is a big online multiplayer game.
Good old MMO, yeah.
MMOs. They announced that, like, they're gonna have in-game store. They were like, hey, you can just buy cosmetics, but we're gonna be selling later experience and, like, boosters and, like, gameplay stuff and quality of life improvements, like fast travel.
Oh, like basic features in most games?
Basic features of most games. Everybody was pretty pissed off about that. The social media who were running the account for either the New World or for Amazon Game Studios was like, I'm glad everyone seems pretty fired up about this. Nope.
Not exactly, bud. Nope. Not exactly what people are saying.
Yeah, it definitely feels like these people are a little bit out of their depths, which is kind of wild. But look forward to that game existing for about 3 months before Amazon takes it down again.
Yeah, so get in while it's hot, you know?
Or just don't get in.
Attack the Block 2 was recently announced, actually. Kind of a fun surprise announcement. It was a science fiction alien film that kind of launched John Boyega's career. And he's going to come back to star in it. And Joe Cornish, who wrote and directed the first one, is also back. I think it's going to be fun. I'm kind of excited about it. We also have, and this is kind of a weird one, but a long time ago, Stephen King and Peter Straub wrote this epic book about monsters and fantasy land and all kinds of crazy shit. It's kind of about a kid who travels to this other world because he's trying to cure his mother's cancer and all these monsters are trying to kill him. It's a whole thing. It's a lot of fun. It was published a super long time ago, but Steven Spielberg actually bought the rights to the film in 1982.
Whoa.
Which was 2 years before the book even came out.
Whoa.
And he's been trying to workshop this mother all this time, but finally, things are starting to align because he is partnered up now with the good old Duffer Brothers and Curtis Gwynn, who was also an executive producer on Stranger Things. And Curtis is going to be writing and showrunning this project, The Talisman. It's going to be a huge Netflix thing if they spend the money on it. I think it could be absurd.
Is it? So it's a film or a series?
Well, it's showrunner, so I'm imagining a series.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
it's a super long book, and they go to all kinds of crazy places, and there are werewolves and giant spiders and, like, a giant doomsday train with guns that goes through, like, an irradiated wasteland full of monsters. It's nuts, is what I'm trying to say. There's a lot of cool potential there, so I'm excited about this new project. Something that I'm less excited about, The Division is back. You thought you could escape, but you can't escape The Division. The Division Heartland, which will be free to play sometime in 2021 or I imagine early 2022. It's kind of set in the Midwest, a little town called Silver Creek. There are player versus player modes, and then there are player versus like enemy mode. And they also mention avoiding the most aggressive, unpredictable virus contamination, which leads me to hope that they did zombies finally.
Please.
Because I'll be real, even though The Division plays pretty well and some of the mechanics are good and the idea is there, it gets kind of old real quick because good old Trevor and I play both of them.
Yep.
And whoof, does not quite keep the attention going.
No, it does not.
But maybe this will be the kick that gets it going. Maybe this is a step in the right direction. Maybe they'll try. I don't know. I'm hoping.
I'm not holding my breath for that. No offense to Ubisoft, but whenever I see free-to-play, I get nervous. What I see is that they're not charging money for me to initially play the game, but they're going to be charging me money to continue to play the game. So, we'll see. We'll see.
There was a little kernel of information hidden in the article, though, about Heartland.
Was it popcorn?
And that's... No, it was that the movie is still on. The Netflix movie with Jake Gyllenhaal and Jessica Chastain.
Weird.
Which, it's very strange. Like, those are incredibly talented people for a film based on a bad game.
So, last week, Destiny 2 got a new season. Season of the Splicer. Gameplay-wise, it's pretty sick. It's pretty cool. A lot of fun things. A lot of cool things returning, like the first raid from the first Destiny coming, I think, on Saturday. So that's pretty cool. Pretty neat. The one thing that isn't neat is their transmog system, which, okay, for people that don't know what transmog is, it's turning gear... giving gear the appearance of another piece of gear, so you don't look like a random mishmash nightmare person. You can, like, kind of customize your look. Not only did they put a cap on how many things you can turn into, like, you can transmog, but they also make the grind really terrible. So it takes 25 hours, 25 human hours, to transmog a full set of armor, which is just insane. It's so long. So people are really pissed about it, and Destiny is or Bungie, who's the creators, are kind of like, oh yeah, we're looking at it, but they're not looking at it. Wanna know why? Because you can buy the materials to transmog in the store for real human monies, about $10. So
something like that.
They're doing it on purpose. So other than that, it's fun. But
yay.
Yeah. It's hard to enjoy while also knowing that there's some garbage happening in the background.
So Microsoft bought Bethesda, well, the parent company, a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this new Bethesda game called Starfield coming out, and you know how much we know about it? Jack shit. It's
nothing.
In space. You go fast. But they confirmed that it's going to be an Xbox PC exclusive. We all kind of knew.
Mm-hmm.
We all kind of assumed. But now, you know, it's out there in the open. Microsoft definitely wants to put, like, big games front and center. Again, we know nothing about Starfield. I'm still irrationally excited about it because that's who I am. Knives Out 2, which we announced recently, was bought by Netflix.
Yes.
The cast is just goddamn insane. I'm sure they've added a billion people since I started recording this podcast. I'm talking Leslie Odom Jr., Catherine mm-hmm. Hahn, Dave Bautista, Ed Norton, Janelle Monáe. Obviously, Daniel Craig is back, and I'm sure a bunch of other people. But this is shaping up to be a real fucking time right here.
Yeah, and I'm putting my money on Ed Norton being the killer, because, you know, it's Ed Norton.
But I'm really excited for that one. Like, the first one was a great surprise. I think we're in for a treat. A lot of trailers dropped recently. We're going to have to face Venom in September.
Oh, goddamn.
More importantly, we get to enjoy The Green Knight, which is A24's new film on July 30th. Looks fucking weird as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm sure I'm going to be irrationally afraid while watching it, but that's great.
Why are they so tall?
It's just, there's so many skeletons, you know, so many axes. HBO is kind of expanding their DC universe stuff and is making a couple new animated shows there, and they announced a Batman show called Batman Caped Crusader. All these big names attached, and it's like a reimagining of Batman. I don't know what that means because we've kind of done a billion of those.
Yep.
But you know, Bruce Timm, JJ Abrams, and Matt Reeves are involved. They also announced My Adventures with Superman, which actually Jack Quaid from The Boys is going to be Superman's voice. I want to say it's about, like, maybe early 20s Superman.
Sure.
He's kind of like, he doesn't really know what he's about yet, and he just met Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen, and they're, like, just becoming friends and really stupid and just kind of exploring life. But I think I'm kind of excited to see, like, these heroes not in a terrible, terrible place, like the Justice League.
Yeah, and it'll be cool to see Jimmy Olsen alive.
But it's cool to see HBO Max is obviously embracing the fact that they have access to so many DC characters, and they're working with Cartoon Network to kind of to give us new material. Like, we still have Harley Quinn that we're going to get season 3 on, and I think that's great. But I think that's all of my news, so if you would like to segue into a fun place.
You know what time it is. Time for Cyberpunk 2077 news. This comes from PCGamer.com. 4 Cyberpunk 2077 lawsuits against CDPR, CD Projekt Red, have been combined into one mega lawsuit.
That's just streamlining, you know?
So there were 4 separate lawsuits against CD Projekt Red, and they've been just squished together, squeezed into freshly made orange juice. And if that orange juice was just a mega lawsuit. They had a statement saying, "The court has consolidated the lawsuits and appointed a lead plaintiff. Following this consolidation, all 4 lawsuits will be subject to potential common court proceedings." They didn't expand on that. They didn't say necessarily how they were feeling about that. Probably not good. I don't know what that says about the chances, but essentially all 4 cases had to do with false advertisement claims, saying that the game wasn't ready, wasn't what was advertised, was unplayable, / is unplayable for people who bought it. I'm curious to see. I don't think this will go to actual court. I feel like it will be settled because, I'm going to be real, I don't think any of these lawyers are gamers and have the drive. I think they just see easy whales. I also feel like I remember, I don't know if this is one of these lawsuits, but actual investors of the company sued or were planning on suing CDPR because they were led to believe the game was in a shippable state when it wasn't. I don't know if that's one of the lawsuits that has been absorbed. If so, I wouldn't be surprised if these guys were the lead plaintiffs because they were the ones who had the most to lose. But it's kind of curious to see how this goes. I know nothing about this because this isn't taking place in American court. It's taking place in the home country of CDPR. I mean, the good news is I don't think necessarily the actual developers, the people that are putting the work in, are going to be too harmed by this. But you also never know. You know, if they end up losing and they have to pay a lot of money, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the future of the company would look like. Something to keep an eye on. I think this is going to be an ongoing process that's probably going to go into next year. I don't think it's going to be a quick resolve, but that's what I got. That's them cyber news.
Recently,
yeah,
I was like, "Hey Netflix, I see you made a new show. I see you made this Jupiter's Legacy thing. It looks a little weird, but I'm going to give it a shot." The thing about Jupiter's Legacy, is that it's an uneventful slog through flashbacks, bad parenting, and preschool ethics that buries its few bright spots under a mountain of monologues and foreshadowing for future seasons that I hope never get made.
Jesus.
It's shit. It's so fucking terrible.
See, and I was gonna actually suggest that show for Middle Watch this week.
Well,
but then I was like, that one's too bad. On a brighter note, I forgot to mention this. Mass Effect Legendary Edition came out.
Oh yeah,
it's all 3 games, the only 3 Mass Effect games, and they're all 4K, 60 FPS, you know, all that gamer shit that people love. It's getting some good buzz. It's getting good. I think it's technically the second highest rated game of the year, right behind Disco Elysium, like Director's Cut. So, definitely check it out. If you have Xbox Game Pass Ultimate or whatever, right? I think it's only like $53. I think it's well worth it. It's all 3 games. Good stories. Good action. Good gameplay. And Commander Shepard just going to town with aliens.
Shepard does it for Earth.
Where can people find us if they want to talk to us on social medias?
Well, you can find us at Out of Dodge Pod on Instagram and Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. You know, any comments, just stop, say hi. Or if you have a TV show that you really like or really don't like and you think we would enjoy an episode in the middle of, by all means, send a recommendation.
Please do. And if you were listening to us on Apple Podcast, give us a rating and leave a little comment. Let us know how we're doing. Also helps our show get discovered.
On this, and on this, and welcome to our video.
We had a reptile.
Wait, wouldn't it have been...